Where I came in, I don't think they had a minion at the beginning.
So Paul said, let's begin with a quick overview of Tosfos. So we're on Daf Kuf Dalet Amud Beis. And we're looking at Tosfos Dibra Maschil Ofu Gvina. And there are four parts to this Tosfos. The first part of this Tosfos is his own shita in understanding the Gemara. And basically, if we summarize Shitas HaTosfos here, in the Brice of Agra, of Ofu Gvina Necholim Be'apikorin, it means that as far as Of is concerned, there's no requirement of Mafsikin, of these separations of Netus Yadayim, Kinuach HaPeh, and it doesn't matter what sequence you eat the oaf in, whether you started with oaf and you went on to eat cheese, or the other way around, you started with cheese, you ate the oaf, there's no need for mafsikim. If we flip it around in the case of behema, of basa behema, then we're going to require mafsikim. And Tosfos' shita is that when you require mafsikim, then you require not only Netilas Yadayim and Kinuach HaPeh, but you also require Suda Achriti. We'll soon see that Rabbeinu Tam disagrees. But in any event, based on his Shita, Tosfos says that the case of Basar Behema depends upon sequence. If you started with Basar Behema, now you want to eat Gvina, then you need A, B, and C. As we said before, you need Tils Yadayim, you need Kinuach HaPeh, you need Suda Achrit. If on the other hand you started with Gvina, that's a different story. Tosfos doesn't really go into details what would be the din if you started with Gvina and now you want to eat Basa Behema. What would you need? My impression is that you would need Netilas Yadayim. I'm not sure if you need Kinuach HaPeh, but you certainly would not need Suda Achriti, that's for sure. That's Rav Chisda on Daf Kuf Hey, that after you eat cheese, you're allowed to eat meat, as opposed to the other way around. Now, based on his Shita, Tosfos explains the Gemara's objection to Rabbi Yitzchak, because in the case of Rabbi Yitzchak, what happened? Let's just go over the case of Rabbi Yitzchak for a split second. And they brought out, let me get this straight, I don't want to mess this up. They brought out cheese, and then they brought out meat. And in this case, they had expected that between the eating of cheese and the eating of meat, he should have had the Netilas Yadayim, and then the Gemara differentiates between Yom and Laila. So that's Shita Satos. That's Roman numeral 1 in Tosfos. Roman numeral number 2 is Rabbeinu Tam. And Rabbeinu Tam holds that after the eating of meat, you need Netilas Yadayim and Kinuach HaPeh, but you don't need Suuda Achriti. If he ate Gvina, then he can eat afterwards basar, and he doesn't eat anything, according to Rabbeinu Tam. Not netila, not kinuach hapeh. Tosfos is going to backtrack on this in just a minute and reformulate Rabbeinu Tam. But at least in the original formulation of Rabbeinu Tam, there was no requirement whatsoever separating gvina if he ate it first and then basar. Which probably means that Rabbeinu Tam is not worried, he's not concerned about the shamnunis of gvina that's left on his fingers, and therefore he doesn't need Netilas Yadayim. But Tosfos has a problem with that, because then what was the Gemara's objection to Rabbi Yitzchak? After all, Rabbi Yitzchak started with gvina. And therefore, according to Rabbeinu Tam, in this formulation, there should be no anticipation whatsoever that Rabbi Yitzchak would wash his hands. And therefore, Tosfos reformulates Rabbeinu Tam, changing one point, and he says that after Gvina, you certainly need Netilas Yadayim to eat Basar, even according to Rabbeinu Tam. However, you don't need Kinuach HaPeh. So the Gemara's question was, how did Rabbi Yitzchak ignore the requirement of Netilas Yadayim? That's Roman numeral number 2. So it comes out according to Rabbeinu Tam, if you eat basar after gvina, then all you need is Netilas Yadayim, you don't need Kinuach HaPeh. And we can fit that in perhaps into in Rabbeinu Tam's language, when he says, af below Netila Kinuach, means you don't need both Netila and Kinuach. Okay, now we're on to Roman numeral number 3. And that is the minog. What is the minog as far as eating cheese after basar? Because So now let's talk a little about oaf as we move into Roman numeral number 3. We said that according to Tosfos, the principle of Agra in the Braisa was basically that as far as oaf is concerned, we don't need mafsikim. And it matters not which sequence, whether you started with oaf or when you finished with oaf. But Tosfos points out, this is the third part of Tosfos, that as far as the minhag ha'olam is concerned, after oaf, we don't eat gvina, and we wait misa'uda l'suda. So Tosfos has a problem. How do you reconcile the minhag with the brice of Agra? And Tosfos seems to imply that there's a fundamental difference between the brice of Agra and our minhag. The brice of Agra assumes that basar oaf becholov is only drabanan, and that's why we have all these kulas with regard to basar oaf, which is called in Agra's language apikorin. However, the minhag reflects the sheet of the Chachamim of Rabbi Akiva that basar oaf becholov is doraisa. And therefore, all the chumras that apply to basar should now apply to oaf as well. So, for example, if you want to eat basar and then gvina, you have to wait 6 hours. If you want to eat oaf and then you want to eat gvina, you have to wait 6 hours. Now, at this point, Tosfos goes into a little bit of a digression, if you could call it. And he wants to try to figure out which shita is reflected by the brisa of Agra. If he's reflecting the shita of Rabbi Yossi Aglili, Rabbi Yossi Aglili actually allows you to eat oaf and cholov together. Because Rabbi Yossi Aglili took the category of oaf to its logical conclusion, and he said that since the Torah only prohibited gedi, which means basar, and not oaf, therefore, oaf is not included, and the Rabbanan never went beyond the Torah law. So according to Rabbi Yossi Aglili, you're allowed to take basar oaf together with cholov, and you're allowed to cook it together in the same pot. We called it a chicken cheeseburger or something of that sort, and you're allowed to eat that, and you're allowed to make that.
Chicken parmesan.
Okay, great. Now we have our brice of Agra. But brice of Agra says that you can eat oaf ba'apikorin, but the brice of Agra didn't go as far as to allow you to eat oaf together with cholov. You can eat it ba'zeh harzeh, but not ba'vasachas. Then Tosfos raises the possibility of Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva holds that basar oaf is drabanan, and we're not going to allow you to eat basar oaf together with milk. And that would be lechora a great way of understanding the brice of Agra. But here Tosfos has a problem with chaya, because Rabbi Akiva excludes chaya on a doraisa level. And the Brice of Agra only went as far as to permit Of Bapikorin, and it did not include Chaya. And according to Rabbi Akiva, there's no difference between Chaya and Of. They're both Drabon, and hence they should both should be outside the pale of all these mafsikim that we spoke about, Netilus Yadayim and Kinuach HaPeh. So Tosus goes on to another possibility, that maybe the author of the Brice of Agra is Beit Shammai. Beit Shammai, if you recall, were of the opinion that Of and Gvina are Olal Shulchan Achas. You can't eat them together, but you can put them on the table together. And if you'll ask me, where do we find any Brisa that reflects the Shita Beit Shammai? We never accept Beit Shammai. But the answer is, we have a Brisa of Rabbi Elazar Reb Tzadik, and that Brisa reflects the Shita Beit Shammai. So Tosfos actually presents this as a viable possibility. Then he presents a second possibility, and going back to Rabbi Akiva, and when Agra mentions Of, Lav Dafka, it doesn't mean just Of, it means Of and Chaya. The reason why he mentions Of, Tosfos says, is because Of is Shchiach, and Chaya is not Shchiach. I always say that I once in my life I got to eat Chaya. I wasn't paying the bill. It was venison. It was. I wouldn't recommend it. I mean, not just because the price was so high, but also because I don't think it tasted good. But my host thought, you know, it was a great opportunity for me to eat venison. At least I could say once in my life I ate Chaya. So Tosfos now says that according to the Brice of Agra, Chaya is Nechal Bapikorin, and there's no requirement of any sort to separate Chaya from Gvina. But the other thing is that Chaya is not Shchiach, and therefore the Brice didn't bother mentioning Chaya. And he says, the Gemara at the beginning said that Of is Osur Midaraisa, and the Gemara says, Kiman Delo Karebi Akiva, the Gemara should have said, Of v'chaya osur midaraisa de kiman de lo Rabbi Akiva, and the Gemara leaves out chaya. The reason for that is because it's not shchiach. It's not common. Now this leads up to the last. I call it the fourth quarter of this Tosfos, which is only one line and change, but I think it's the most important line in the whole Tosfos, at least as far as I'm concerned. And to try to figure out this last, I don't know what you call it, a postscript here, then he goes back to Rabbeinu Tam. Let's read it again together. Rabbeinu Tam mefarish taima di agro, mishum di of, eno nidvak biyodayim, ubishinayim, ubechanichayim. So the main words here are of, eno nidvak. Now here, in order to understand this Rabbeinu Tam, we have here a machlokes between Rabbi Kiva Eger and the Rosh Yosef. Rosh Yosef is the same author of the Prima Godin. And I photocopied this for you. I gave it out yesterday. If you didn't get one, or if you're interested in getting one, here you have it.
Thank you.
And basically, we can summarize the following. Let's understand Rabbeinu Tam, and this will be one approach, as a separate comment. A separate comment. It's not a hemshech. We don't have to see it in the broader context and framework of this last section of Tosfos, but rather it goes back to really basics. Rabbeinu Tam is trying to explain the Brice of Agra. Why does Agra say that Of is Nechal Bapikorin? And the answer is, says Rabbeinu Tam, because Of is not Nidbak. And Rabbi Kivega derives a very basic conclusion from Rabbeinu Tam, and that is that there would be a difference between Of and Gvina. Gvina is Nidbak, Nidbekes. And therefore, says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, if you were to eat gvina, and now you want to eat oaf, and we really didn't discuss this case until this point, because we discussed the reverse case. If you eat oaf and then you want to eat kavina, we said that was the minug lechumra, that you have to wait 6 hours. But I'm talking about the reverse case now. Says Rabbi Akiva Eiger, the reverse case where he starts eating kavina and now he wants to eat oaf, we're not going to apply the principle of agra, of apikorin. We're going to require netilas yadayim. And the reason for that is because of what Rabbi Natan points out here, that oaf is not nidbak, but kavina is nidbekes. And if kavina is nidbekes, then we need a mafsik. So it means the following: he takes cheese into his hands, and now his hands are full of some sort of shirayim, some sort of shamnunis of the cheese, the fats of the cheese, whatever you call it, and that has to be rinsed out before he picks up oaf. You'll tell me the Brisa says that oaf is nechal bapikorin. That's as far as oaf is concerned. You know, you want to start with oaf, and you want to ask me whether I need a mafsikim after oaf. The answer is oaf doesn't need mafsikim because it's eno nidbak. And perhaps you might be tempted to draw the conclusion in the reverse, that if oaf is nechal bapikorin, maybe it means that even if the oaf comes second, I don't need any mafsikin. But that can't be, because if gvina is nidbekes, then we definitely need netilas yadayim. So we'll need netilas yadayim, according to Rabbi Akiva Eiger, to separate between the achilas hagvina and the achilas ha'oaf. I'm not sure that Tosfos, which was Roman numeral number one here, would accept that, because I think Tosfos had the opinion that oaf is nechal bapikorin means in both directions. Whether you start with oaf and you end with kavina, you start with kavina and you end with oaf, in both cases, Tosfos doesn't make any distinction. You're nechal bapikorin. You don't need anything to separate. But now that Rabbi Natan has introduced the concept of nidbak, and that's the underlying motivation or reasoning of Agra, that the reason why Agra says apikorin is because oaf is ain't a nidbak, so it seems that the critical element here is nidbak, and we always have to address the question whether it's nidbak or not nidbak. In the case where he starts with kvina, then by definition kvina is nidbekes, Rabbi Natan will certainly require netilas yadayim. Now we have the shita of the Prima Gadol, which is in his commentary on Chulin, which is called the Rosh Yosef, and he says no. This statement at the end of Tosfos in the name of Rabbi Natan is not to be seen as an independent statement, but rather should be seen in the context of the previous discussion of Tosfos. Tosfos wants to know, the Brisa of Agra, which Shita does it reflect? And Tosfos wanted to suggest that it reflects the Shita of Rabbi Akiva. But Tosfos had a problem. How could it be that the Brisa of Agra reflects the Shita of Rabbi Akiva, namely that Basar Ofa Palav is only Drabonon? If that be the case, then Basar Chaya is only Drabonon according to Rabbi Akiva, and hence the Brisa of Agra should have mentioned not just Of but Chaya as well. And Tosfos comes up with a bit of a dochuk answer that, you know what, Chaya is not mentioned because it's not Shchiach, but it's really there. Comes along Rabbi Natan, and he says the following: While it's true that both Basar Of and Basar Chaya, according to Rabbi Akiva, are Drabanan, however, when it comes to the question of Apikorim and whether we require Netilas Yadayim and Kinuach HaPeh, here you have to add another element to the equation. When Agra says that Of is Nechal Bapikorim, he's basing himself on two variables. Number one, Oaf is the Rabbana, but number two, he needs another variable, and that is that Oaf ain't no nidbak. And that's what the Prima Gadol calls Tarte Litivusa, meaning there are two things going in favor of Oaf, Lakula, to allow us to eat Oaf without any mafsikim. That is number one, A, because it's the Rabbana, number two, B, because it's ain't no nidbak. The Nachkamina is going to be Chaya. The reason why Agra omits Chaya, it was absolutely deliberate on the part of Agra, because in the case of Chaya, you will need Netilas Yadayim and Kinuach HaPeh, and the reason for that is because Chaya, as opposed to Oaf, is Nidbak. So don't rack your brains and try to figure out why Agra left out Chaya and say, well, he really meant it, but it's not Shchiach and he didn't say it. No. He deliberately left out Chaya, says the Prima Gondim. And that's exactly what Rabbeinu Tam wants to tell you. It's not enough to achieve the goal of Agra of Apikoron to say it's the Rabbanon. You need another variable. You have to check off another condition. It's got to be a new Nidbak. If Lu Yitzur, you have a case of Bas B'chalv D'Rabbanon that's Nidbak, then Enoch Nami would require Kinuach HaPer and Etilus Yidayim. That's the case of Chaya. So therefore the omission of Chaya in the Brice of Agra was deliberate. That's the machlokas here between Rabbi Kiveger and the Prima Gadol. Now this Sefer, which is called Moreshes Moshe, claims that there's an afkamina between Rabbi Kiveger and the Prima Gadol. Again, it's not as far as far as Chaya is concerned, meaning both presentations, both understandings of Rabbeinu Tam, whether it's Rabbi Kiveger's or the Prima Gadol, they both agree that Chaya requires Netilas Yadayim and Kinuach HaPeh. According to Rabbi Kiveger, the reason for that is because the whole basis of Agra is because of Enu Nidbak. Gvina, for example, says Rabbi Kiveger, which is Nidbekes, requires Netilas Yadayim. And Chaya, which is not only Nidbekes by Yadayim, but also it's Nidbekes by Nashinayim, would require both Netilas Yadayim and Kinuach HaPeh. Rabbi Nitam in the version of the Prima Gadol would certainly exclude Chaya from this Apikoron and would therefore require Netilas Yadayim and Kinuach HaPeh in the case of Chaya, because that's exactly what Rabbeinu Tam comes to answer. Why was Chaya omitted from the Brice of Agra? And the answer is because in the case of Chaya, you need all these mafsikim. But where is the nafkamina then between Rabbi Kiveger and the Prima Gadol? And he says it's going to be the case where he ate gvina and now he wants to eat oaf. According to Rabbi Kiveger, who understands the whole thrust of Rabbeinu Tam is to answer the question of Apikoron in Agra, and the answer is because Oph is Enu Nidbak, then Gvina is Nidbekes. Masha Enkin, according to the Prima Gadol says that fundamentally what we have to talk about is not Nidbak versus Nidbekes, but rather, first we have to ask the question whether it's Doraisa or Derabbanan. When you're in the Derabbanan mode, then you have to ask yourself the following. If you're talking about Oph, so the Derabbanan, when they instituted the Iser, Basar, Oph, Becholov, they never instituted the Gzera of Mafsikin, of Netilas Yadayim / Kiduach HaPeh. Oph was totally excluded insofar as it's Derabbanan. You'll ask me about Chaya. The answer is Chaya was included in the Gzera. The reason for that is because Chaya is Nidbekes. So it means, according to the Prima Gadol, when Rabbeinu Tam pointed out that Oph is Enu Nidbak, he was trying to express or achieve the goal of why is it that Oph was excluded from these Mafsikin. Once Oph is excluded from the Mafsikin, it doesn't matter if he ate the Oph first and then he eats Gvina, or he eats the Gvina first and then he eats Oph. It matters not, because Oph was never included in the Gzera. So it's the only reason Rabbeinu Tam mentions Nidbak and Eino Nidbak is that he wants to set up a contrast between Chaya and Oph to explain Agra, that according to Agra, Chaya was included in the Gzera. Oph wasn't included in the Gzera. Once Oph is not included in the Gzera, and we saw that in Tosfos Lishitoso at the beginning of Tosfos, then don't talk to me about Gvina. Because if after Gvina he's eating Oph is not included in this Gzera. There was never a Takona that required Kinuach HaPeh or the Netilas Yadayim for Oph. In the case of Chaya, though, Chaya was included in this Gzera of Mafsikin, despite the fact that it is Derabbanan, and that's because it has this tendency of Nidbak. But don't talk to me about any combination of oath. So whereas Rabbi Kivager is assuming that that Rabbi Nitam is coming to explain Agra, and he's saying that Agra depends on Nidbak and Eino Nidbak, then certainly we have to contrast the case where he started with Ov and then he eats Gevina, as opposed to the case where he started with Gevina and then he eats Ov. But according to the Prima Gadim, the premise of Agra is that Ov is excluded. Why is Ov excluded? Because it's the Rabbanon. Chai is not excluded, says Rabbeinu Tam, despite the fact that it's the Rabbanon, because it's Nidbak. Oaf is a very extreme case because it has that tarti l'tivusa. It's not only the Rabbana, but it's also the Nidbak. So they excluded it from in Gansen, totally from this whole enterprise of Gzera of Mafsikin. Chai, on the other hand, although it does share one major common denominator with Oaf, and that it's the Rabbana, but it's unique in its own category because of its Nidbak, and therefore the Rabbana were very worried about that Nidbak, and they included Chai in the picture. But if you started with Kvina, and now you want to eat Oaf, according to Rabbi Tam in the version of the Prima Gadim, there's no problem, because once you get to Oaf, there's no Gzera whatsoever. How many people followed anything that I said? I mean, this that I just gave you is the product of hours and hours of work.
The part I was awake for, I followed. Sorry about that.
That's okay. It's after sleepless. I mean, so I'm up since 4 today. Yeah.
So they disagree about whether Chaya is Nidbak or not?
No. Everybody agrees that Chaya is Nidbak. And therefore everybody agrees that in the case of Chaya, Rabbeinu Tam is going to agree that you need both the Tils Yudayim because of the Nidbak Yudayim and Kinuach HaPeh because of the Nidbak Bein Chanichayim, the Nidbak Pepeh. That was never an issue. The issue is going to be Gvina. If he starts with Gvina and then he eats Oaf. If he starts with Gvina and then he eats Chaya, Bosa Chaya. So Chaya is something that was included in these Gzeros, according to both versions of Rabbeinu Tam. But if he eats Chaya and then he eats Oaf, he eats Gvina and then he eats Oaf, so there are two ways of understanding that. If you understand that the entire raison d'etre of Agra is Nidbak versus Eder Nidbak, then Gvina is Nidbekas. You're going to need Nitil Sidayim after Gvina. I don't know if you'll need Kiruach HaPeh, but you'll need Nitil Sidayim. If, on the other hand, the basic reasoning of Agra is Drabonon, just that we have to add on top that Oaf is not only Drabonon, but it's Eder Nidbak, so it has those two variables, those two descriptions, and therefore it's excluded, then once it's excluded from this Gzera of Mafsikin, then any time you eat Oaf, no matter what sequence, whether it's before the Gvina or after the Gvina, you don't require any sort of Mafsikin. And that's the opinion of the Prima Gadim. So the Nafkamina between Rabbi Kivager and Prima Gadim is only this issue of Gvina and then Oaf. If you have the page, you'll see I made a little arrow there on the bottom. So if you follow the arrow on the bottom right, you'll see that. Now, I have another piece here that I photocopied, but I think this is a little bit too profound and complicated for our 7:30 shiur in the morning. So I'm going to leave this for my 11:45 shiur. I would love you to listen to it. And again, it's not up because I haven't given it yet. But, I don't know, our days have become more busy as we get into the Rosh Hashanah mode. But just in case, I'm just mentioning to you, I can email you a link if you like. But that, it's not going to be up until probably tomorrow morning or so. Something like that.
Number one, I'd like the link. But number two, can you summarize in two or three sentences what that's about without giving us all the answers?
Okay. I'll give you the deal. Let me just ask you to turn back to the first Mishnah in Kol HaBasar. And if you take a look at Rashi, which is on the bottom line of page Kuf Gimel Amud Beis, the Osu Lahalos. Now watch what goes on over here. Rashi, in the first Rashi, has pointed out that Kol HaBasar includes not only not only basar behema, but also includes chaya and oaf. And then Rashi suggests two possible ways of understanding that. Either chaya and oaf are also included in gedi, and that makes it doraisa, or it's at least the rabbana. Then the Mishnah goes on and says that you're not allowed to put kol basar, meaning any type of basar, on the same table that you're eating gvina. And the implication is that even chay and oaf, you're not allowed to put on the same table with gvina. Now Rashi feels compelled to give us some explanation for that, because bishlam, if you're worried that, you know, we might come to eat, let's say you and I are eating, or let's say one person is eating, he might come to eat basar behema together with milk, then you could talk about a daraisa. But if you're talking about oaf and chaya, which are the rabbanon, according to that man the Omar, then it's a bit strange that we should go a step further and say not only are you prohibited from eating a venison burger with cheese, a venison cheeseburger, right, or a chicken cheeseburger, but not only that, you're not allowed to put them on the same table. You can't put venison meat or chicken meat on the same table with gvina. I mean, that's really going very far. So Rashi says, Dilma, what are we afraid of? Asi lemichlinu ki hadadi. So ki hadadi means that he's going to eat them together in one mouthful.
Specifically mouthful?
Correct. He's eating them together. That's the literal translation of Rashi. But together means in one mouthful, if you follow my point. And Rashi says, Dekonagi ubali me'adadi. They touch each other in his mouth, right? The chicken and the cheese. And as he's chewing it up, bali me'adadi, they absorb the taste one of the other. So Rashi wants to show you that although there was no official bishul here, obviously he's not cooking in his mouth, like my father-in-law, Zalzayin Gezut, maybe, well, Erev Pesach, he's magil, you know what hagol is, you know, to do his dentures. So I said to him, Shver, I don't think you have to do that because there's no blia inside your mouth. I mean, so he said, but sometimes I drink very hot, you know, hot coffee with milk in it, and maybe there's some chametz in it because I dip my strudel in it, whatever it is, you know what I mean? So I mean, the chances of actually having a blea of chametz in your dentures, I think, are very, very insignificant. But my shver is not the only one who does this, you know. It's not a pleasant thing to watch if you're not used to dentures, but, you know, you know, if you consider what my father went through in the war, you know, yeah, saying, and then years in Siberia, you know, saying, the fact that he still has anything to put in his mouth is a miracle of sorts. In any event, so generally, you know, Rashi can't say that he's cooking the, you know, the chicken with the milk, because he's not. I mean, he's the chicken was cooked separately, the milk was cooked separately, the cheese was, and now he's just putting it in his mouth. But Rashi says when he puts it into mouth, they touch each other. They, you know, you grind it up together. You know, you salivate, so there's also a liquid substance here. And bali me'adadi, and Rashi says that there's a blia here.
Oh wait, nagi b'toch ha'peh. That's what you mean.
I think, or I'm not sure exactly, because he starts with lemichlininhu, right? He eats it, so it sounds like it's in his mouth. That's how I understood from the word michlininhu. And then dekonagi. So obviously, if he's eating them together, then they touch each other. I mean, it is possible theoretically you could put the cheese on the left palate, you know, left side of your mouth, and the chicken on your right side of the mouth. But that's highly unlikely. He's eating them together in his mouth.
Even then, it's probably still going to touch in the end.
They what? They
probably still going to touch in the
touch
end.
Touch in the end. So he's chewing it up. And now as he chews it, I think this saliva coming out of his glands, and it's a liquid substance that's got both cheese and chicken in it. And Rashi says, bali me'adadi. Blia means there's going to be absorption of taste. The word blia always refers to ta'am. So you've got...
But it's not cooked enough.
Exactly. So Rashi is telling you here that everything is set in place for Basar B'chalav minus one thing, and that's Bishul. But otherwise, what is the purpose of Bishul? Meaning, in terms of Basar B'chalav, why did the Torah prohibit Bishul? The answer is because through the Bishul, the Tam of the Chalav goes into the Basar, and vice versa. To such extent that the Gemara, we didn't get to this yet, calls it Chaticha Nasis Nevela, meaning the whole entity becomes one Isur. And if it falls into another Taroves, it's called Chaticha Nasis Nevela. We'll have a lot to talk about that when we get to it. You're going to need Shishim in the second Taroves against the entire mixture of meat and milk. You can't just be Mavat on the milk or the meat because Bali Me'adadi, through the Bishul process.
But according to the Mandamer where the oath is the Rabbanan, then this becomes, because now you're removed from Bishul, even when it's all together, because even though that may, the time may be the reason, that's not the, you know, the
so I guess what we're doing is, and that's what this essay is all about, is that once we included Of Midrabanan in Basar, then not only are you enjoined from cooking Of with Gvino, you're not allowed to even cause a Blias Tam of Of and Bleed. You follow? Mm. We look at it as a two-stage process, but Rashi didn't look at it that way. Rashi looked at it as a one-stage process, meaning once we upgraded Of on a Darbonan level to the status of Basar, then the melee you can't eat Of together with cheese. Now you might ask, well, I didn't cook it, you know, I only chewed it, and it was in the Sinas Tam, but according to Rashi, that's the import, that's the implication of calling it Basar B'chalav.
So Blia without Bishul is, it kind of has a status that's more than Durabana. It's
correct.
Not the rice really, but it's
more it's more than a Gzera Durabana. It's not just that we're afraid if we allow you to do this, then tomorrow you're going to do that. It's much more profound than that. You've really got an entity on a Durabana level of Basar B'chalav, because if you were to, let's say, you do a scientific experiment and you were to take out the piece of chicken and put it, you know, and feed it to a non-Jewish, let's say, what do we call it? A kfela, means a chef. He would tell you, hey, this chicken tastes a little bit milky. There's a little bit of a milk taste in it. So in a certain sense, it's really an object which you can call Basar B'chalav. Again, all on a Rabbanan level, because the Torah requires Bishul. But the Rabbanan looking at it as Basar B'chalav.
It's not that, right. It has... There are. I'm trying to remember what that. But I know there are a couple other times where things are, you know, like it's a much stronger than just the gazera.
Correct.
Like really,
100%. And that's what this article is all about. That there's something that goes way beyond the gazera. And in the brisket terminology, again, this will be foreign to you, but if you get familiar with brisk over the course of time, it's not unfamiliar to us. In this terminology, I'll just read to you one line. He writes that according to Rashi, it seems that in the case where he eats basar of, right, of, together with gvina in one mouthful, it's a cheftza de isura de basar b'chalav. You hear the word cheftza? Because, you know, the founder of the brisket derech was Reb Chaim, Soloveitchik. And Reb Chaim used to talk about Gavra and Cheftza. I mean, there were many other things that he spoke about. I don't want you to think that you can exhaust the entire methodology of Reb Chaim in one sentence, but I've written extensively on this. But one of the most profound breakthroughs of Reb Chaim, which is a Gemara at the beginning of the Dharm, but Reb Chaim took this Gemara and he made a science out of it, literally. He made a methodology out of one Gemara. The Gemara just asks, what's the difference between a neder and a shmua? And the Gemara says, quote, neder is aser cheftale, and shmua is aser gavrale. So the Gemara says that shmua is an iser gavra. There's nothing inherently aser in the thing, just that I'm not allowed to do the action, whatever that action is, in any case of a shmua. And neder is in the cheftas. So Reb Chaim saw in this, like, worlds. You know, this is mamish worlds. I can't begin to tell you how many worlds, how many doors he opened up with this key that you always have to differentiate between the gavra and the chefta. And this is one example. I mean, he doesn't quote his grandfather here, but this is something that, again,
that's from Rav Soloveitchik?
Yes and no. I mean, you see, the problem with Rav Soloveitchik is that he didn't publish. Very little. Really very little. Less than 1% of what we have from him was published by him. Mm-hmm. And even, I would say, 90% of what he did publish is all philosophy.
Right.
It's not halakha. It's not what you call lumdus, you know, an analysis of Gemara. So whatever we have is what we call Torah Sheval Petz, the oral transmission. And the oral transmission is not 100% reliable. This is an oral transmission of a shiur that Rav Soloveitchik gave probably, I wouldn't be exaggerating if I told you it was 50 or 60 years ago. And as you, people in my profile or background, as we get older, we begin to see that there are, if you want to classify those who transmit Rav Soloveitchik's Torah that they heard orally and transmitted in writing, and you want to categorize those writers, because there are tons of them, it goes from here to here, from the lowest to the highest. Do you remember the old elevators in the department stores? You remember those elevators? They still have them? You know, with the it's like a clock?
Yeah.
You know, like, I don't know what you call it. So I once gave notes without even looking at them. Somebody asked me if I have any of the Rav Shimon Beitza, Masech the Beitza. So the only thing I had was Rabbi so-and-so's notes. I don't want to mention his name. He's not even a rabbi, actually. And without even looking at them, I gave it to him. That was one of the biggest mistakes of my life. I mean, he came back to me and said, that's Rav Soloveitchik. These are the great chidushim. Because that particular note taker was on a very low level. I doubt if he really, really understood the shiur. And then you could go to the other extreme. And that's, I'm thinking of one person in particular, who has such a talent to transmit the Rav's Torah that you wouldn't believe the Rav himself didn't write it. It's just beautiful. It's
who is
just
that? Perfect. That you can tell us.
That's my favorite is Menachem Gnack. I don't know if you heard of him.
I've heard the name.
Yeah,
sure.
Rabbi Gnack. He's the head of the Kashrus department of the OU, if you've heard of the OU. And the OU Kashrus is reliable, I think. I would think even Satmar relies on OU. I don't know, I shouldn't talk. But I think it's pretty well accepted, the OU Kashrus standards. And he's the big man of the, he works a lot with Rav Schechter. But in any event, if you read his writings of the Rav, and unfortunately there's not that much, he needs more time to really publish more books. It's beautiful. And then the second one, which is a half a notch lower, but is also absolutely stunning, is called Harari Kedem. And that's three full volumes already. And they're moving on.
And that's Rav Soloveitchik? That's a team?
Yeah, that's Rav Michal Shurkin's notes of Rav Soloveitchik's class that was rewritten by his son-in-law, Rav Auerbach. Mm-hmm. And it's just a masterpiece. I mean, for me, it's like candy. I mean, I'm telling you, I love it. But between that and the other extreme, I mean, there's so many different levels.
Well, I've taken notes for Shiur, which is on a much lower level, obviously. It's given on Shabbat, unfortunately. But I can appreciate the difficulty in...
To transmit Torah Sheval Peh and Torah Sheval Tzav and committed to writing, especially this profound... Everything is a subtle but profound distinction and definition, and the words are so critical. If you know a little about the Brisker tradition, if you say over something from one of the greats, you have to say it exactly the way he said it. Rav Baruch Ber, for example, if you ever heard it, was a Talmud Rav Chaim Brisker. They say that when he said over his Rebbe's Torah, he would pull up his pants exactly where Rav Chaim would pull up his pants in the Shia. Now, to you and I, that sounds like a galechta. That's a joke. But it just indicates to what extent, you know, the way you heard it is the way you say it over. And you can't add and subtract, because every word is calculated. So when you're giving over the Rav Soloveitchik's Torah in a written form, it's a really dangerous business. And I knew a man in Boston who had tons of notes of the Rav Shia. He's not alive anymore. And I asked them if I could photocopy them, because, you know, we New Yorkers didn't have access to the Rav's Torah in Boston. You know, this was Torah that the Rav gave on a Sunday morning. He used to give a blot shiur on Sunday morning in Maimonides. And immediately he says to me, I can't give it to you because I don't know if the Rav would allow that. So I said to him, I'm going to ask the Rav. And the Rav said to me, Vizel, I should tell Dr. So-and-so to give you a copy of his notes. And the amazing thing is that I photocopied literally hundreds, if not thousands, of pages of notes. And when this man passed away, 2 years later, the family contacted me. We can't find his notes. Can we borrow your photo? Isn't that an amazing story?
Wow.
It's because Berzon asked the Rav, and the Rav said, tell Dr. So-and-so that I gave permission. And that's why these notes are not lost to the universe. Wow. Anyway, that's just the... All right, so Rabosai, I know it's getting late, but we still have 10 minutes. Let's begin the new mission. And that's our Daf Kuf Zayin Omid Beis. Okay, so everybody has to know. Well, what we're skipping is 2.5 lot on Netilas Yadayim. Netilas Yadayim without any connection to Basa B'Cholov. And you're perfectly invited to learn those sugyas. I would suggest that you go through all of Mishnah's Taras before you start. So we're in the Mishnah on the bottom of Daf Kuf Zayin Amid Beis. This is the second Mishnah in Perikol of Basa, Kuf Zayin Amid Beis, 107b. So now, at the beginning of the parak, we said that you're not allowed to put basar and gvina on the same table because he might come to eat it together. And this Mishnah comes to teach us that there are situations in which you're allowed to put cheese and meat together. And we're not afraid that you'll eat it together. Tsorer odom basar ugvina b'mitpachas achas. You're allowed to roll or wrap meat and cheese in the same cloth, ubilvad, but on one condition, shaloyu nogim zebazeh, they shouldn't touch each other. Right, so you imagine you have the cheese here, let's say you had a piece of hard cheese, right, so you roll it, and then after you roll it, you use the remainder, the balance of the mitpachas, so this cloth, and you roll a piece of meat. But there's no negia, there's no touching. This, by the way, is very reminiscent to the Rashi that we just saw at the beginning of the parak. That when you put both of these in your mouth at the same time, then the nogim zebazeh. Nogim zebazeh, according to Rashi, means bali mehadodi, right? There's going to be some exchange, interchange of ta'am. So here too, we have to make sure that there's no negia, there's no contact between the milk and the basa, the cheese and the basa. The Gemara is going to explain this a little bit later, but right now we'll go to Rav Shimon Gamliel. We're again discussing these Darabonans, these Harchokos, and we spoke about two people eating from the same table. This one's eating meat, and this one's eating cheese, and that's a problem. But Rav Shimon Gamliel has a limitation. He says, Omer, Shnei Achsenoyim. Now, I'll give you the literal translation of Achsenoyim, but really it's a catchphrase, if you know what I mean. It's a paradigm of a concept. Achsenoyim means two guests in an inn. And this is symbolic or representative of two people that don't know each other. Imagine you have a chadar ochel in the hotel. You know, hopefully, you know, if you, let's say you spend Pesach or Sukkot or some holiday in a hotel, hopefully you'll get to know some of the people at the table. But theoretically, you don't know anybody at the table. You know your members of your family. The rest you say Shalom Aleichem, you nod, you give wishim chag sameh. That's about it. So this is what's called Eino Makirim Zed Zed. That's going to be the Gemara's language.
Back then, when they travel, they would stop, and you have to stop overnight more frequently.
Right. So it was very common that you would be eating a milchik meal and I'm eating a flesh meal off the same table. Says Rav Gamliel, that's fine. There's no problem whatsoever. So that's called Shnei Achsenoyim Ochlim al Shulchan Echad Zeh Bosev Zeh Gvina. Gegas of the hate, we don't care. Vein choshu, we're not afraid. Why? Because we don't know each other. Later on, the Gemara is going to say, what if they know each other? Then we're afraid they might share each other's plates, so to speak. So let's look at the Gemara. The Gemara says, "V'chinogea zevozeh my havi." Why are you so makpid in the Mishnah, the Reish of the Mishnah, that you make sure that there's no negia? My havi means what's the deal? What's the big deal? Tzonein b'tzoneinu. Everything is cold. Now he's not wrapping hot stuff that's boiling hot. And if it's tzonein b'tzoneinu, then there's no blia. So the Gemara says that there is blia. Even in the case of tzonein b'tzoneinu, there's some blia. It's what you call the minimum blia, surface level blia. The last four words are written as read as a rhetorical question, hadacha milo boy, which means the following. The classical discussion of hadacha, and we'll get to klipa in a second, is nevela. Nevela means you have non-kosher meat. So let's say non-kosher meat comes in contact with some wet substance. And once there's a contact between the two, then there's a surface level blia. That surface level blia requires hadacha. Hadacha means you have to rinse it off. Once you rinse it off, then any, or in this case, for example, any milk or cheese that might be on the outside of this basa because they come in contact would be completely removed. Now, klipa is already something else. Klipa means that one of these two substances is boiling hot. So again, it's not a real bishul because there was no medium of liquid. Bishul means when you put two things into water and you heat up the water. Here there was no, you're talking about solid substances, but nevertheless one of the substances was hot, and that's already more than just surface level blia. That's already a deeper penetration, and that requires klipa. Klipa means you have to strip off the entire layer of this meat on the top layer. So what Abai points out is that if you wrap cold chicken or cold meat together with cold cheese and they touch each other, even though you'll tell me there's no blia and you'll prove it to me from the fact that you don't need klipa, you don't have to take the meat and strip it of its outer layer, which is kedei netilas etzba. By the way, if you look at your finger and you think of the thickness of your finger, again, I don't know whose finger is it. Og Melech HaBoshet had a very fat finger, but some finger. And that's called kedei klipa. That's the layer of penetration in the case of one hot substance that touches even a
finger's width?
A finger's width. Not length, but width.
My word, that's a lot.
It is a lot, because that's a serious penetration. Because again, keep in mind, Chaim, we're talking about something that's boiling hot.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's not boiling hot, is there any exchange whatsoever? The answer is yes. That's what Abai wants to point out. And that's the requirement of hadacha. So we don't want to lechatchila create a situation where you'll require hadacha. Again, theoretically, you could say to me, well, you know, Rabbi, don't worry about it. You know, I'll let them touch each other and then I'll wash them out. Well, we never allow you lechatchila to thrust yourself into a situation where you'll need X, Y, or Z afterwards. You'll need either hadacha, or in certain cases you'll need klipa, in other cases you'll need agola. We don't allow you to put yourself into that position because you never know what might happen.
What about with oaf? We're discussing, you know, that let's say you go with the mandama that's a rabbana, but also it's no nidbak, then so.
So again, if we go back to the Rashi at the beginning of this parak, mm-hmm. Rashi is saying that if you're going to eat the chicken together with the milk, even though chicken is only drabanan, but nevertheless it has the status of basa b'chalav if there's a taam of chalav in the oaf.
In the Tosafot, the Rabbeinu Tam said it's not nidbak. So. Would you have to rinse in this?
When Tosa says it's not nidbak, he's talking about on the hands or the mouth, right?
But when it touches
a piece of cheese, then there's going to be at least a surface level of what's called hadach milo boy of interchange of taste, and that makes it into basa b'chalav. Now he has here a footnote in the name of the Rashba. This is a slightly different thing. He says the following. Ein ha isur ela bibasar mevushal. He says that the only isur here applies to cooked meat as opposed to raw meat. So he says the following, that if you have cooked when I say meat, don't take me at, you know, literally, meat means anything that's fleishig, right? We're not getting anything that's meat and it's cooked. Now we're going to consider the cheese, if it touches the meat, as a miktas blia, as we said before, a limited kind of blia, such that you would need hadocha, and that's a problem. And it's not a problem b'di'evit, you know, that you could do hadocha. But if I understand correctly, and again, I don't have the Rashba in front of me, so I can't judge this, but the impression I get from this quote of the Rashba is that if the meat would be raw, then what are you afraid of? You're afraid that you might need hadacha, but it's raw meat anyway. So raw meat is not even in the parasha, so to speak, it's not even included in basar mecholof, because basar mecholof requires some sort of cooking. So if the meat is already cooked, now when you penetrate the taste of the cheese into the meat, then you could talk at least on a drabbana level of some sort of blia, and even though it's soni mitzonein, you're going to require hadacha.
In other words, I could eat raw meat together with cheese, according to that.
No, that I don't know. I'm not sure how far he's going.
Okay.
So not maybe we'll come back to this. Let's just see if we finish the Rashba, maybe it'll be clearer. Okay. He says, Lefichok yesh li zar, says the Rashba, we should be very careful, shelo yiga begvina, right, that this cooked meat should not come in contact with cheese, shema yishkach v'yochlenu below adocha, because we're always afraid that maybe he won't do adocha. Oh, aval basar chai. See, this is the key point here, which we... It's not pshat that basar chai you're allowed to eat with cheese. No, that's not what he's saying. What he's saying is that even though basar chai, together with cheese, will have some sort of a surface level blia, that we called it a mixas blia for hadacha, he says, I don't have to worry about it. Why? He'll do the hadacha. Lucy will tell me, well, in the case of basar mevushal, he'll do the hadacha. He says, the fine, what's unique about basar chai, about raw meat, is ein darko la'ochla b'lo hadacha. We can rely on the fact that he's going to do hadacha, not because he's a pious Jew, but because we don't eat raw meat until we wash it off. Okay, but I'm not a cook, so I can't verify this, but that's his premise.
I'm going to wash the cheese off anyway because of health reasons.
Exactly, so for health reasons, he's going to wash it off, right? So if you're Sfaradi, then Beit Joseph and all that, but for an Ashkenazi, you know, we might not be so nervous about this, but that's the deal. We don't eat raw meat without washing it. Ismaili says, Mutal itzor b'yachadim gvina, and even though you have to worry about no geaz, and therefore what? So in the worst case scenario, he'll do adocha. Here in this case, we don't have to be afraid that he won't do the hadacha, and the reason is because ein darko lecho b'lo hadacha. So that's something you might want to keep in mind. Again, we're not learning Shulchan Aruch. We'd have to look in your day and to see whether or not you would allow lechatchila contact between raw meat and gvina under the premise that later on he'll do hadacha. We have 2 more minutes, so let's see what we can do in 2 minutes. Rabbi Shimon Gamliel, Mishneach Sanoim, Ochlim El Shulchan Echad. Each one, this one is eating basa, this one's eating gvina, Ein Choshesh, there's no problem. Omer Rav Hanan Bar Ami, Omer Rav Shmuel, Lo Shanu. When does this law of Rabbi Gamliel, this principle of Rabbi Shimon Gamliel apply? Ella, only in the case of Ein Makirim Zetzeh. They don't know each other. Aval Makirim Zetzeh. Imagine you call up your neighbor and you say to him, hey, let's go away for Pesach. You know, we're going to go to the following hotel because, you know, we're good buddies and we want to spend Pesach together in a hotel. Is Osir. In that case, we can't eat from the same table, you and I, me and my neighbor, my good buddy, and he's eating fleishiks and I'm eating milchiks. That's not the case of Rav Shimon Gamliel. Rav Hanan is pointing out, Rav Shimon Gamliel specifically honed in on achsenoim. And what's unique about achsenoim? They don't know each other. And the Gemara quotes a brisa to support this position. Tanya Nami Hochi, we learned the same in a brisa. Rav Shimon Gamliel, Omer Shnei achsenoim, Shenis Archu, Lefundok. Nisarchu means they happen to be guests in the same achsanya, in the same inn. Echad zeh, bo min hatzafon. Echad meaning in one same inn. Zeh Bavin Atzafon. This one is coming down from Metula. V'zeh Bavin Adarom. This one's coming up from Beersheba. They don't know each other. Zeh Bavin Chatichaso. V'zeh Bavin Gvino. So this one brings his piece of meat and he eats it on the table. This one brings his cheese. And Ochlim Al Shulchan Echad. They both eat from the same table. Zeh Basa Zeh Gvino. V'yein Choshu. We're not afraid. But lo asru ela b'tfisa achas. Okay, so we'll have to understand what tfisa achas is. That'll be the subject netter of tomorrow's discussion. We get together tomorrow at 7 a.m. if you can make it. And we're going to talk about tfisa achas as a case where they know each other. And if they know each other, they're going to sort of share each other's meals, and then we have to worry about baser b'chol.
Okay. Tfisa achad is part of the breakup that's in the book.
Yes. Okay. But we'll really have to, it's going to take a while until we figure out what tfisa achas means.